Chris!
We are back, and so are the Lions. The old saying, a week's a long time in football, and what a difference it makes. Very different person recording the podcast this week, apart from the fact that I'm feeling a little bit better after contracting whatever my son picked up from daycare. A little bit more buoyant after Friday night's performance. Obviously, a weird night, and we will get into it very shortly. But don't forget, you can always follow the Brisbane Lions Fancast on any sort of social platform, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Reddit. And of course, you can always shoot through any questions or feedback or anything to blfancast@gmail.com. All right, let's get into it.
Ashcroft, Brayshaw.
Wow.
20 touches for Brayshaw.
Oh, no.
Back at it again for the next episode of the Brisbane Lions Fancast. Bit of a different mood in the air today, Patrick.
There is a different mood. Funnily enough, there was a lot of pissed offedness post-game, but I've come to see it as it's 1/8 versus 7/8 that it was. So
yeah,
you were at the game. How was it?
Strange. Very strange. Very good for 3.5 quarters. Happy to admit, I didn't see it coming. Was walking in with a high degree of nervousness after our round one performance. I thought, oh no, Melbourne by how much? Just hoping to see some sort of response, as I'm guessing a lot of people did, and got to see it firsthand. Fantastic.
First off, we look at the ins. One for you, Dara Joyce.
He did come in. I'm glad. Not that that would have taken too much Nostradamus type work there, but we obviously looked small down back, and Melbourne's got some pretty handy tools, so I think we did need some sort of height and size down there. He didn't have a great game, didn't have an awful game. He did his job. He'll warm into it if we need him again.
Other ends were Big Darcy Fort and the magician Zorko.
Yeah.
And going out was Pryor, Kadeen Coleman and Tunstall, and Dev Robertson was the Medi sub. Again, the app had Pryor as the Medi sub.
Sure.
And then it hastily changed. So do better, AFL.
I thought those were all good calls. I mean, concussion obviously gets Coleman out, so fair enough. Maybe he'll come back in this week. We will get to the 22 later in the show, obviously. But Tunstall and Dev, I mean, they weren't alone in not performing, but they were quite poor last week, as were a lot. So I think to get some height in was much needed. And neither of us even remembered to mention Darcy Fort when we were talking about coming up against two of the best ruckmen in the AFL. So that's an oversight on our behalf, but the right call in the end.
Yeah, well, speaking of oversights, I just want to make a slight correction from last week that I believe possibly even baffled you, where I said that you need 6 or 7 wins to make the top four. Now, what I meant is you can only actually afford 6 or 7 losses.
Yep.
To be able to make the top four. So I just wanted to clear that up because I heard it and I felt like a donkey. So we'll move on to that with the ins in and the outs out. It was a bit of a hot start, and I must admit my fears of a couple of quick goals to Melbourne were abated and the crowd was not turning on the Lions. Shed any light on that?
It was a nervous, however long it took to get that first goal from Bailey. I think like you could feel a huge sigh of relief from everyone in the Gabba once that goal went through. You're like, all right, we're on here. We got the first goal, so let's work on the next one. Seeing Berry move into the middle was a good sign. I think everyone enjoyed that. Seeing McCluggage back out on the outside. I know personally when I saw him line up on the wing, I was really happy about that compared to him starting in the middle. It was just a completely different. It was a complete 180. We saw the best this week after we saw the worst the week before. So if we can keep going somewhere towards Friday night's performance this Thursday against the Dogs, then I think we should be all right, and it shapes up to be a good Easter Thursday clash.
Yeah, it was interesting because I did hear a little bit of rhetoric from some of the players and from Fagan that against Port Adelaide, we weren't actually able to play our system, just given the nature of not having the ball and the lack of pressure. So it was almost like seeing the game plan for the first time this week, which was really good. Did you see the handshake between Clayton Oliver and Jared Berry as they lined up for the first bounce?
No, I didn't. I was too busy looking around the ground at all the different matchups.
Yeah, no, it's understandable. And I suppose that was focused on quite heavily
from
on
Channel
the television
7, yeah.
Because I think the trial by media last year, it was a good story, let's say. But obviously, I guess Jared Berry's professionalism kind of came through. So fair enough. The rest of the first quarter, though, smacked him. 6-2. Anything stick out for you?
I guess there's the willingness to dig in compared to last week, getting our hands on the ball and actually, as you said, see that game plan, see that those defensive strategies and patterns being put into place that we just didn't get to see last week at all. It allowed players down the ground like Harris to play their role better and pull out a really good game. Obviously, the massive talking point of the first quarter is Max Gawn going down with a knee and those heartbreaking scenes of him in the change room that, like, even the Brisbane, they'd show that up on the big screen and even the Lions supporters like, come on, man, don't do that. Like, you're making me sad. Everyone likes Max Gawn. No one needs to see him like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's likable enough, but, you know, what's being the nicest guy in prison, I guess?
Oh, jeez. I suppose. Nah, I mean, I like Max Gawn. I think he's good for the game. He seems like a laid-back dude, the sort of guy who would give you his time of day as well. So how much did it play into the result at the end, especially with Stephen May a late swing as well? I mean, you can only play the team that's in front of you, but no doubt those two names, along with Keziah Pickett being out, I did welcome those changes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just touching on Max Gawn, it's an element of, I think, one of the few sort of larger-than-life characters sort of still in the game, probably with like Nat Nui and Franklin, but I suppose some of them have overstayed their welcome a little bit. Franklin.
I mean, some would argue Nat Nui as well.
That's a good point. Yeah, thinking about it, we did definitely set up for the two ruckmen to kind of go with both of them. And I think given – it was interesting because we surprisingly didn't actually have – I don't think we won the hitouts.
No.
Even with Gawn going off across the game, which makes me kind of wonder – I know Gawn gives a lot around the ground, but was the added level of pressure and coherence of the mids – kind of inconsequential to Gawn's injury? I know it's a big deal, but Melksham is no slouch coming in as a sub, obviously in a different way, but another runner. And I thought Melbourne's run got killed by us, which is really interesting. What difference a week can make?
Big time. And I liked the way that once we sort of put that buffer on, even if it was only a couple of goals, our ball movement changed dramatically. We were looking for just like the first available chip kick option, just avoiding bombing it down the line at any costs, because it's obviously burnt so many teams playing against Melbourne over the years. Even without Gawn and May, we still sort of stuck to that game plan of slower ball movement, controlling the tempo, and then just slingshotting when we had the opportunity to get it done. But like a bulk of the work was done in the midfield. So they obviously got their right bake throughout the week, and it was good to dominate the clearances. I think we plus 30 in the end in clearances, which was, there's not many teams that do that against Melbourne.
No, definitely not. And I did admit after the horrifying stat of, I think it was 4 contested marks last week, to see Melbourne with 1 at about 3-quarter time, I think is when I checked. It's hard. Now, I assume we'll talk about the break in play a little bit later on, but it almost feels a little bit hard and the stats are very, very warped by that last 12 minutes. So it's kind of a hard thing to go and check and sort of see the lay of the land, as it were. But I think the reluctance to go long down the line meant that when we did, in the few occasions, it meant that they were kind of less set up for that, given they were kind of trying to match us in the corridor, which I think, you know, it's good when you try and sort of poker face someone into doing something like that. I think it can be really positive. And actually, for their slight frustrations, you know, one-on-one Hipwood and Danaher can take a mark.
The thing I enjoyed most about Joe's game was his ruck work in the forward 50, his willingness to just take it out of the ruck and try and jam it on the boot or dish it off, a la Tom Hawkins style that has dominated us and many other teams over the last decade.
He hasn't quite mastered the art of the finesse that Tom Hawkins has, but...
No, not yet.
It's like a kid giraffe in the rucks a little bit.
But it was just good to see that just changing those little things up to there as well. I want to talk about Zorko being back as well. We talk about the ins. He was obviously a very notable in. That's the Dane Zorko of, what, 2014, 2015 that we saw. He was, you know, best part of 5 to 10 killers, lighter, breaking lines. His ball use is just exquisite. Add a dash of Zorko cheekiness, and it was almost the perfect game from him.
Yeah, it was interesting to see him line up at half forward and make an extra number ahead of the ball and ahead of the contest, which is, it's interesting because we spoke about how, I spoke mainly how I was a little bit worried with the mids committing forward of the ball against Port Adelaide, and they were doing that, but they had an extra number and they were able to kind of roll with it. So, you know, he made up an extra number and created a bit of space for the forwards, you know, behind him, ahead of us in the attacking 50. But yeah, I've got written down, Zorko looks 10 years younger. So make of that what you will. Is there a bit of Just for Men going on in that hairline? you tell me.
Look, he can jam whatever he wants on his head. If it's good enough for Joel Selwood, then look, as long as he's playing footy like that, Dane Zorko can do what he likes as far as I'm concerned. Will Ashcroft, great game from the kid, obviously got on the scoreboard. He drew a couple of high free kicks. And
They were both there. There were some unhappy Melbourne players, but I think you know, there's some pot kettle black, and they were there, and he took his goal. He looks very assured.
He just for a kid playing his second game, he just seemed to know what the right decision was every time he got the ball in his hands. He just seemed to have that extra second.
Yeah. It's interesting watching a game. I tend to sort of kind of foolishly look at a lot of players and go, sort of, do they feel or seem older or younger than me or the same age? And Ashcroft seems older than me, and he's not. I can guarantee you that. And he's not one of many that seem older than me.
No.
So,
and this is a genuine child out there playing, yes, like an elite game of footy. Now, he's obviously not going to do that every week. He, like everyone else last week, had an average game. It wasn't, he didn't have a poor game, but he didn't set the world alight like he did this week. So it's just great to have another A-grade midfielder in there rolling through. He started on the wing and played, I don't know how much time he split between being inside and out on the wing, but it was like when he played either role, he was really good at both of them.
I thought as well, as far as, you know, newer recruits, Josh Dunkley was really good.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
He monstered it in the clearance, and he sort of has just sort of fit in there in that game, just in terms of looking like he's been there for a long time. A lot more cohesion amongst the midfield, and it was nice to see sort of two genuine bigger bodies and Neil, who kind of plays a bit bigger than he is anyway in the contest, kind of go in there and mix it with the Melbourne mids, who have been kind of the gold standard for a pretty beastly midfield, so...
I don't think we're going to see Lachie Neal dominate as many games this year as we have been used to seeing him pulling in, you know, stupid numbers, high 30s, even low 40s. Now that we've got players like Dunkley and Ashcroft in there to share the load and take touches away from him, but just allow him to do what he does well, even better, and have potentially the same impact with 25 to 30 touches.
Yeah, I mean, I've always kind of been a little bit, let's say, skeptical about kind of midfielders that tend to just accumulate numbers. And I think it's kind of symptomatic of a lot of things, not necessarily the quality of the player. So I think with good players around, you're looking at some really, some potentially powerful games as a unit rather than, you know, there will be individual standout performances for sure. One thing I just want to make mention, your man Dara Joyce, in my opinion, the best, worst, first kick. I know not in AFL, but for the Lions, he kicked it off his instep through about four Melbourne players and straight to a Lion. Can't remember who. I think it was the last kick of the first quarter, so that one was worth noting.
Absolutely munged it, didn't he?
Sometimes you just need a little bit of that to go your way to kind of get the head in the right mind frame. But that was... definitely one worth noting. Gunston seemed absolutely adamant to shell the ball out of the Gabba. Perhaps it was one of his wayward kicks that cut the power. Who knows?
Yeah, it's how many did he drain out on the full in the end? Was it two or three?
It was two, but I'm going to put it out there and say that he more than made up with it. Made up for it with his treatment
Of Harrison of Petty.
Harrison Petty.
Oh, those poor man's ankles.
Now, that possibly drew one of the larger reactions from me watching at home, because it was just like,
It's hard to feel too sorry for Harrison Petty, I suppose, but you don't want to see any man going down with a knee from something like that.
No, I mean, Harrison Petty's kind of, it's an odd one between the dynamic between him and Zorko in the back end of last year. I think for all of the vilification of Zorko, and potentially justifiably so, I think Harrison Petty decided to carry on with it in the semi-final. You make your own bet sometimes, so if you're going to kind of create that sort of dynamic, then you got to live or die by the sword. And that was definitely a Gunston backslash, as it were. So I'm okay with it.
Shallow throw in, work to the front. Bailey out of the air. Perfect start for the Lions.
I think with this new game style, obviously a bit more focus on the defensive patterns and running, I don't think we're going to see the big scores that we've been used to seeing from the Lions as well. I mean, we would consistently hit over 100 points. Now, it's only a small sample size, and we made the best part of 100 points on Friday night, and if the power didn't go out, we probably would have eclipsed that. But I just don't know that we're going to score as heavily with the way we're moving the ball.
I'm not sure. I think you're right on the sample size. All I will say is that they did make mention on the broadcast that Melbourne hadn't conceded 100 points in, I think, 76 games.
Okay.
And it essentially took divine intervention to stop that. So maybe that is where we should go to here, the big blackout.
Sure.
Your thoughts at the game. Who, what, when, where, why?
Yeah, big time. All of a sudden, you know, balls in motion and then just complete darkness. My side of the ground still had a few lights on in the stands. It's weird to see how like a big group of people react in, not an emergency, but like in a just completely unique situation where people just start screaming. People just start like cheering or booing or both or clapping or just making noise because something's happened. It doesn't matter what that something is. And then everyone's just left in confusion. Ground announcer kept coming on every now and then saying like, you know, please note we're working on it. There's been a neighborhood blackout. And then I was relying on people messaging me to tell me what was going on and if it was coming back or what the situation was.
So it was odd on the broadcast because I thought that someone was holding, like had held up a sign like over the bottom half of the camera. And I was like, get a load of this jerk. And then everything went. So split second, I apologize to the fictitious jerk in that situation because it was me. Yeah, it was handled not great.
I mean, it's one of those things where you don't really expect how to handle it. And you probably should at the Gabba because it's happened a couple of times. I've been to one big bash game in my life, and that was the one where the lights went out and the game got called off. So when it happened again, and I think maybe, I don't know, half an hour passed, I thought to myself, I got a baby at home, I got to be up early in the morning, am I really going to like sit around and wait to see if this maybe comes back after the 60 minutes, or do I just cut my losses and go, and then if it comes back, just watch it on my phone, which is what I opted for in the end.
It was interesting, so on, you know, I sat through the 40-odd minutes of 7 and Fox Footy drivel, and they mentioned a lot of factors regarding the idea of the game going back on or not. They talked about the integrity of the game. They talked about Melbourne's percentage. They talked about Coleman medals. They talked about betting. They talked about player welfare. No mention at all about the fans, the paying crowd members, spectators, none of that was even mentioned by any one of the Channel 7 or Fox Sports individuals, which I thought was piss poor because as far as the integrity of the game goes, for me, that last 12 minutes shows nothing towards the integrity of the game that the rest of that game was.
That last 12 minutes was completely different in every way, shape, or form to the first 100-plus minutes.
I would also vaguely argue that we should have had possession of the ball on the restart because Wilmot had it and dropped it.
Yeah.
Neither here nor there, but it seemed, I don't know, pass me my tinfoil hat, but it almost seemed they had a tired ruckman, single ruckman, you know, and we were, I don't know, look at the scoreworm. The scoreworm is basically it's a straight line trending towards where the game was and then just absolute calamity in the last 12 minutes. I've heard mixed things from different sources saying whether it is 30 minutes, whether it is 60 minutes. I can't seem to find any sort of consistency in that.
Yeah, well, the story keeps going that it's written down in the rules that it's 30 minutes, but then for the elite competition, which is the AFL, then it gets pushed out to 60, and no one can seem to sort of really verify if that writing exists somewhere.
It is also worth noting that on the broadcast, they were talking about the game restarting at the latest at 10:45. So as far as heads in arses goes, no daylight savings in Queensland. So, you know, would only have been 9:45. So I guess it just sort of shows the level of, I suppose, perspective from the I thought it was a very weak broadcast across the game on a whole.
No one was prepared for it. No one knew what to do. Everyone was just sort of flying by the seat of their pants. And like, well, we've got to fill time here, so what do we do?
I kind of wish that the power man had just kept the power off, to be perfectly frank. But
I would have taken the 40-point win.
Yeah, I went to bed in a bit of a slightly aggrieved mood, despite the win. And I've managed to kind of, you know, luckily we didn't record the podcast at, 11 o'clock on Friday night?
Yeah, no, there'll be none of that. the only thing, I mean, yep, happy to get the win. They've obviously just put the queue in the rack during that time and gone, well, we've got this win. Let's just walk out there, try not to get any injuries. But if we do come out with, I mean, I don't know what the go is with Jared Berry's shoulder after all of that. If that turns out to be something, then that's probably the biggest loss of the whole 12-minute fiasco.
It was almost a worst-case scenario because I saw, I think, 3 players go down in that time from the Lions. I can't remember who, but it was definitely kind of hearts-in-mouth situation. I thought Berry, while he was on the field, and Ashcroft were the two that stood up in that moment of the game. Zorko had been subbed out before, so Dev Robertson was on. But, yeah, kind of essentially the less said the better about that last few minutes. So
yeah, that was like watching us play last week. It was a complete anomaly. So I'm happy to just bin it and focus on the good footy that was the first three and a half quarters. We saw the response that people wanted. We stuck it to what a lot of people were saying were the premiership favourites leading into the game. Not much more you can ask for that, really. Now onto the Dogs on Thursday night. 6-day turnaround with some travel. They're coming off 2 losses that are going to sit with them. So who knows?
They played on Saturday, yes?
Yes.
So they've only got a 5-day turnaround.
Travel? No, so they've got 2 home games. So they were at Marvel on Saturday, and they'll be Marvel again on Thursday. So one less day prep, but no travel. So I guess maybe that evens out a little bit. I'm not too sure.
I guess you'll have to ask the 2004 preliminary finalists.
Don't. What did you think of Wilmot's role? He was primarily a halfback last year in those, I don't know, handful of games he played, but he's been sort of more wing, even half forward this year.
I think he looks taller.
He looks
quick. I know that sounds, he's a gangled creature and he's bloody quick, but I think he looks a bit taller and he is very body on the line for me. I like it. I think he's done good, done pretty well. So he's kind of at the moment a bit of a lock in the starting 22 for me.
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, we'll get to the 22 later, but I don't see too many changes from that team, to be perfectly fair. Obviously, Connor McKenna, in the first episode, I was not sold on him, and that was largely due to a singular quote that he pulled out in a couple of interviews.
He's the man of many nicknames, hey? McKenna, McCrucial, Patient Zero, Sergeant Snot Rocket. There's plenty to go, so...
He's been fantastic, though, obviously.
I found it interesting to hear Harris Andrews after the game talk about the back six and how three of the back six are not regulars of said back six. I didn't even think about that, the idea of Joyce, Rayner and McKenna. I know it sounds bleedingly obvious, but yeah, the idea that half of them are kind of newer to the group or to the position, it's good, you know. It's a bit of a change. I think defences were, you know, although it was team defence last year, we definitely got hammered down back a little bit last year, and I think it bodes pretty well. McKenna, yeah, he shows a lot. He shows a lot of willingness to run. I don't, turnovers aside, for that first goal, but...
I mean, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
His ball use has never been particularly elite. I mean, he's known for his run bounce and carry, and he made up for it, obviously, with that play that ended in that Zorko goal from just inside 50. He got the ball off halfback, dished it off, kept going, ended up getting it back in the passage of play maybe three or four possessions later. And then you could tell he delayed that handball for a second because he thought about, like, well, do I have a shot here from 50? And then he saw Zorko and was like, nah, I'd better dish it off. And obviously the right call in the end. You know, if that's the sort of stuff we can expect from him, more than happy with that.
Well, I think there's a level of versatility too, just in terms of who do you play across a halfback now? You've got multiple options and you can kind of pick a 22 to suit, you know, either who you're playing on or who you're not, which it's not the most AFL thing to be doing, to sort of have multiple players in multiple roles, but it's worth thinking. You know, that's definitely something that happened with the two rucks coming in. You know, you're picking certain players to play against your opponent. Although, you know, I would quite like to see the two rucks go again.
I don't think you changed too much from that team. I mean, you probably want Coleman to come back in, but I can't think of it whose expense, really. Like, we're coming up against the Dogs, who are a very tall team down back and forward, so I don't want to take out too much height. So
the only thing you could potentially think of is a bit of a changing of the guard and having Coleman come in for Daniel Rich.
Not yet. He hasn't warranted being dropped, I guess.
But would you call it a dropping, though? I mean, I think that can be, just because someone's coming in that improves the squad doesn't mean that it's a dropping. It's merely an omission or an improvement on the team. Change your rhetoric, boyo.
I get it. Maybe we should ask Daniel Rich, see what he thinks, if his name's on the outs. Oh, so I know you did get dropped, but you're not playing this week, so what do you think?
His old bones need rotation.
McKenna gets on the end of what he started. Zorko can go all the way, drilling low ball from 30. They've got three in 7 minutes.
All right, well, let's get to the votes. You want to kick things off because you were reluctant to give votes last week, so maybe you might be more amenable this week when we play well.
So my votes changed after, you know, the black went. So I went previous two, I had Zorko at three and Ashcroft at two. But with the last 12-minute fiasco, I put Ashcroft to three because I feel like he kind of kept us in it. So Ashcroft three, Zorko two, and I had Jared Berry with one. Melbourne can sod off. They don't deserve any votes. Gorn, seven votes. Why not? But Berry stood up in some big moments early on in the game, and when Melbourne's sort of mids, he didn't spend as much time toe-to-toe with Oliver, but when he did, he did a really good job. I think Oliver only had four contested possessions for the half, so.
Fair call there. Yeah, I had Zorko at the three and Ashcroft at the two, and then I changed my one about 48 times between Dunkley, Oscar, Harris, and I think I'm going to land on Harris for the one. I think he was back to playing a really good game. I mean, Brown got a hold of him from time to time, ended up kicking three or four in the end, I think, but I think that was a really good game from Harris. I think Jack Payton played a really good game as well, especially with whatever happened to his hand or wrist at some point during the game.
Yeah, it is a little bit frustrating that kind of the Melbourne score is sort of inflated, but yeah, I can't disagree.
I guess maybe with those three new players down in the back six, Harris, as we know, likes to sort of take care of the group and help out his man when he can, and that's probably leads to a lot of his undoing. I remember that first game that Jack Payton played, it was against Richmond or something, and Harris was so focused on helping out Jack Payne and like being a third up in the contest that I think Tom Lynch or whoever he was on ended up kicking like five goals.
I do remember that. That was the one at Metricon during COVID, I believe. Yeah.
It could have been Jack Riewoldt's 300th, perhaps.
No, that was a year later on.
So. Yeah, okay. But I just remember that sticking out like dog's balls. Just like he was so worried about Jack Payne that he didn't focus on his own game. And I think there may have been an element of that with those new players. But I think he was probably back to somewhere near his best on Friday. But, I mean, Dunkley, another fantastic game, high 20s, clearance machine, did exactly what we brought him in to do with those, you know, as a defensive midfielder. Lachie Neale didn't have a quiet game at all. 27 touches, 8 clearances. That's a good game in anyone's books. And Clary ended up with 37 touches as well. So there's players, but I've landed on Harris.
Yep, I'm on board with that.
Down to her, clean possession, got the kick away, and it's gone through.
I had a question. We hadn't, given that I missed the first, you know, the first podcast, the preseason one. Thoughts on the co-captains? Do you take it more as Neale as sort of the club figurehead and Harris is sort of the match day captain?
It's a tough one. I think there's a couple of reasons for it. I think marketing definitely comes into it, with Lachie Neale being like, hey guys, look, we've got Lachie Neale. He's our shiny Brownlow medalist, best player in the comp. Kids know him, kids like him. Oh, Lachie Neale, Lachie Neale. Whereas Harris is the sort of guy that will rock up to any sort of event that the club asks him to, pose in, you know, a stupid costume for a photo, and do that sort of stuff. I also think it's hard to be a really good sole captain from the back line. That's not to say it can't be done, like Nick Maxwell and Tom Harley, two premiership captains as key defenders, basically. So it can be done.
Shannon Hearn as well, I think.
Yeah, true. So it's not impossible, but I think just to have that message spread all up the ground, I think Harris would have made a fine sole captain. I don't know so much about Lachie Neale. I would much rather him just continue to be an elite footballer than have the weight of captaincy on him. I don't hate it. I don't love it, but I don't hate it.
I guess it's better than having five captains, I think, as was the case when Jonathan Brown should have been made captain. Not quite as obvious a choice this time, but I think it did kind of seem, because Harris was leading them out. Harris did the coin toss. But yeah, I think Lachie is the kind of the media man and that sort of thing. It's a good yin-yang. And I think you could probably see more clubs doing that. I know.
I mean, Sydney's been doing it for donkey's years, and they're, I mean, renowned for having an elite culture in the competition. They have done for years. So I don't know. A lot of people don't like it, but I don't hate it. I think there's worse things. I mean, the 11-man leadership group is probably more annoying than two captains.
11-man leadership group. That's almost a full lineup, but there you go. I suppose as long as they're taking responsibility, that's all you can really ask for.
Well, I guess that's what makes, you know, another thing to make last week's performance so annoying is apparently we've got 11 leaders out there. Why aren't any of you leading?
Yeah, well, I guess it's food for thought. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
I mean, you don't know what to say. No one knows what to say about last week's performance anyway.
One thing that's interesting with the leadership group and or captains is we do have quite a lot of junior captains amongst the list now. So it kind of almost looks like the future looking a bit bright. I think Noah Answorth was a captain in his year. Dev Robertson. I think Brandon Stasevich was captain of WA in his draft year.
Ashcroft was obviously.
Will Ashcroft, obviously. Yeah. So there's quite a lot spread around the ground, and I think looking forward, there's sort of, as much as Berry and McCluggage look like those leaders, with then, you know, Bailey and Rayner being the slightly, you know, funnily enough, older players of that kind of the new draft picks coming in, you might see some of the leaders looking a little bit, you know, further down potentially in the future. But, you know, we just got two new captains. Why am I talking about the next in line? So,
I mean, that's what you do. I suppose you project. Like, I didn't even think, I thought about the Bulldogs game for a second before I started worrying about how we're going to match up on Collingwood the week later.
I think, though, I spoke about the Lions' bit of a lack of maturity, but I think the one game, looking at the next game, it is sort of a younger mentality, whereas I think as you get a bit more mature, you can look at blocks of games and sort of say, well, you know, you're not necessarily just taking each game as it comes, but you can look at the thing as a whole. I don't think that there should be any kind of cognitive dissonance between sort of saying, oh, you know, you can't think of the game two down the track or this. You should be able to separate that. Human brain's a wonderful thing.
Zorko stepping this way and that away, and then the goal. Brisbane have got their third.
All right, changes to the 22. Are you making any for the game against the Dogs?
So we've got a question mark over Berry and a question mark over Coleman. Now, I don't think that that's a straight swap, but maybe it could be.
I mean, it could be that simple, and then just shuffle around who plays where. Maybe move McKenna more up to a wing.
Yeah, if Berry's fit, he'll be there. For me, I mean, I didn't make particularly great changes last week, if at all. I can't even remember them. I'd stick Coleman in, and I'd take Rich out, cutthroat.
Fair enough.
If Berry doesn't play, Dev Robertson comes in probably.
It's not really. Is it a like for like? Do you reckon Robertson for Berry?
I think it's probably perceived to be to inside or outside players, which is interesting that a guy that's 195 centimetres and a smaller mid can be both considered inside and outside mids. But that's the game we are playing, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, if Coleman's right, he comes back in, but I just don't know who he comes in for.
Do you think, given the ongoing concussion things amongst the competition and with Marcus Adams and stuff, they might err on the side of caution with Coleman?
They might, but we haven't heard any update. I'm just saying, if he is right, if he gets the tick, then I think Fagan will chuck him back in, but maybe he won't. I mean, he did do that interview on Crunch Time where he said he'd be reluctant to put, you know, even if Marcus Adams got the tick of approval, he'd be reluctant to put him back in. So maybe not. So maybe I don't change a 22. Maybe I sit right on the fence and don't change a team that has just done a number on Melbourne. So you know what? No changes.
Beautiful. I like it. Man of tradition, as it were.
Turns his opponent inside out and then goes deeper. Bailey got it. Snap it goal. Another one. They're a-flowing at the moment.
Now, we do like to take a look back through the annals of the Brisbane Lions history and pick out an obscure player that's walked through the doors over the last 20 years. I had Sammy Sheldon last week. Who have you got for us this week?
I've gone with one, and this is a bit of a homage to my mother.
Oh, hello.
I've gone for the 100-game man, Shaney Stiller.
It's not often you associate a 100-game player and obscurity in the same sort of breath, but I guess when he plays 100 games between 2006 and 2012, sure.
I don't understand how that's possible in terms of just the sheer volume of games. Midfielder, but he did all right, I guess. I don't know.
I don't think he gets 100 games playing for any other club other than us during that period of time, to be perfectly fair.
I would agree. Looking at his stats here, 22 games in 2009, which took us to elimination final.
That's right. Yeah, we got up against Carlton in a very famous final at the Gabba and then got done in by the Dogs the week later.
Yeah, like he played 22 games twice and 21 games once and not much in between. And somehow made it to 100, but I think I definitely agree with you. If he's playing for any other team, he doesn't make 100. But when young Stiller turns up in, well, that ship might have already sailed.
I'm not holding out hope for the father son of Shaney Stiller's kid. Let's be real here.
Speaking of father sons, you know, we've obviously got quite a good one here. Do you think there's going to be any regret in letting Sam Mays leave on 99 games?
No. No, I don't think.
Fair enough. Well, there you go.
Do you?
Oh, categorically no.
Yeah. You know, if in 15 years, 18 years time, whatever, if Sam Mays' kid lights up the competition, then sure, woe with us. But I guess you could be like, if you look back at the early 2000s team, and you probably would have been sitting there going, oh, I can't wait for Simon Black's son, or I can't wait for Michael Voss's son, you can't wait for Nigel Lappin's son, Jonathan Brown's son. Surely not too many people were going, oh, Marcus Ashcroft's kid's going to be, you know, best player in the league. He was probably down the list a bit.
Yeah, I think it's more just casting a wide net, as wide a net as possible.
Yeah, and but bloody Michael Voss's kid can't get a game anywhere.
Yeah, shame for the young fella.
Well, has
Brett Voss Jr. or whatever.
Has he tried being good at football?
Yeah, he's tried.
Yeah, okay.
He's done exactly that, and it gets off the boot of Cameron. Blistering start for the Lions.
All right, well, we'll look ahead to the Dogs Thursday night at Marvel. 5-day break for them, 6-day break for us, as we discussed. They're a relatively tall team as well. Norton, Jamara, Roy Lobb's out, but they've still got Sam Darcy, who got subbed off on Saturday night. Not really sure why, if that was injury or just cause. And then they've got Liam Jones down back, Alex Keith as well. So they've got some tall timber all over the ground, as well as Tim English that can obviously float.
Liam Jones did play on the weekend, yeah?
He did, yes.
So this is, quite a few talls there. Jamara seems to be kind of, he sort of hit his stride a little bit. I guess we'll sort of see what happens there. Good to see this is one of the few that I'll be able to get to. So looking forward to it. Going to the weird ambiance that is Marvel Stadium.
Norton is generally the one that if anyone gets a hold, he gets a hold of Harrison, can take some marks. It's just whether he's got his kicking boots on is whether he makes a real difference.
Yeah, I think I agree. In my mind, the two games where that has happened have both been in Ballarat. So with windy conditions. So, I'm not sure. I think I think if we play well, play our game, play like we did against Melbourne, it shouldn't really be too much issue. I think Thursday night, everyone's watching, another big Melbourne club playing in Victoria. You know, they'll be looking for us to kind of slip up.
They will, and then and obviously they're coming off 0-2, so they're going to be wanting to come out and prove themselves as well. So I agree with you. We should win, but a little bit nervous. There's just something about it that's not sitting right, and I don't know why. Maybe it was that round one performance that's still sitting with me.
I think you asked the question last week, you know, where do we sit as a team? Is it the close wins or is it the significant losses? And I think we kind of almost got somewhere in between. But thinking of that, thinking of predictions last week, Sheldon feel good factor, I predicted 10 goals. That's why I was so ticked off. So,
oh, we were close.
Not far off at one point, but there we go. Have you got a thought for Thursday?
I'll be happy if we can win by sort of 4 or 5 goals. If we can beat the Bulldogs down at Marvel, a game that, you know, a ground that they play particularly well, and then we can walk away with the win with 4 or 5 goals, then I'll be happier. But not to say that's what's going to happen. That's just what I'm sort of got my fingers crossed for.
Quick deck, roof closed. Should be a decent night, I think.
Conditions are right for Charlie.
Yeah, well, he hasn't sort of really... The Smalls, interestingly, well, Zorko aside, but Cameron and Link McCarthy are sort of yet to arrive this season, so...
Yeah, that's my one question mark is on Link McCarthy. He's just sort of on watch for me. He bobs up and does bits and pieces every now and then, but I can't remember him having like a really solid contribution for a while.
Just a word on Charlie Cameron. A lot of people probably wondering where the motorbike has gone. New celebration. Now, I would wager that is mimicking Marcus Rashford from Manchester United, the point to the head.
Oh, right. Yeah, I did see that.
I don't really get it. Not a Man United fan myself, so bring back the motorbike. I don't think a point to the head does quite the same.
No, not so much. You know. Whatever, as long as it's King goals. All right, well, that brings the end to this one. A much better, much more lightened mood for episode 3 of covering round 2 against the D's. Round 3 against the Bulldogs this Thursday, and then the Easter Thursday clash against Collingwood. So a big couple of weeks to come. Been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
But I do want to leave you on one thing. You little beauty!